Good day to you, love ninjas. We are all in for a treat. My current husband, JT, and I feel this is a safe space to admit that this right here, this is our second time around. We both have been married and divorced. JT insists that I clarify, while we are genuinely excited to dig into divorce, the prospect is off the table for today.
For today? How about all days?
Okay, hey man, you're not the boss of me. But I do enjoy being married to you. Back to today. We are honored to be joined by, I'll say it, our new best friend, Karen McNinney, the Good Divorce Coach. Karen is changing the ways families navigate divorce. We can all agree that divorcing families are starved for better outcomes with less debt, destruction, and despair. Her signature, Good Divorce Experience, guides couples through the legal process of getting divorced, but more importantly, she teaches her clients how to be divorced. Yep. Karen is a certified divorce coach, mediator, co-parenting specialist, crucial conversations trainer, gracious space facilitator, and host of the Perceptive podcast, The Good Divorce Show. With more than 25 years of professional experience, Karen has become the go-to expert on developing relationship literacy for all, at work and at home.
Literacy. Can't get away from it. Even as a dyslexic, I'm excited for this, though.
The Good Divorce Experience was born from Karen's own journey through divorce almost 15 years ago when her children were 5 and 7. She built the business she needed then and has shared her expertise from the TEDx stage to the kitchen tables of families in transition. With her guidance, Karen's clients learn to navigate the path of their divorce in a new way, with more hope for their family and compassion for themselves and former spouse. Hailing from the dazzling state of Montana, you can find Karen biking, hiking, or running with scissors through the Rocky Mountain West. Without further ado, friends and ninjas, allow me to welcome the Good Divorce Coach, Karen McNinney.
All right, love ninjas. We have a very special guest, the Good Divorce Coach, Karen McNinney. Thank you so much for being here. We couldn't be more excited. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing great. Thanks, JT. Thanks, Jordan, for letting me dig into some things I'm really passionate about.
Oh, we are so beside ourselves to have you here. So everyone on our pod kind of knows that JT and I have been through this. Yep. And I rocked at divorce. JT, not so much. And so when I found out that he was divorced, my response was, congratulations. It was not the right time for him. So you went through this personal experience and leaned into the point you decided to make a career of what many might consider a dumpster fire. And so how did you get into this line of work?
Well, I will also share with you, it was about a decade of marinating my post-divorce until I dove into this world. And to be completely honest, as I was facing, you know, the erosion of my marriage, and thinking, is there going to be a divorce in this story? This happily ever after, forever until we die? That this is not what I signed up for. None of us arrive at the altar thinking there's going to be an ending put upon us. And at year 7, right, that 7-year itch, and I remember telling a friend, Michael and I were great. No 7-year itch here. We're doing good. And then that 7 year to 8, lots of things started to unravel. And probably before then. And honestly, I think a lot of times we know our truth long before we speak it. Because it's not a truth we want to speak, that we want to know. And was absolutely in denial. And you go to couples counseling and you work on it. And let's be more sexy, less sexy, more free time, more family time, more of the gym, less sugar. We'll try anything. And I am pro-family and pro-marriage and relationships, as you know, and you talk about it. You both of you are so open about this. It's work, it's effort, it's intentional. And honestly, I was paralyzed by the thought of divorce. I would rather have died than go through a divorce. And I speak about that in my memoir that'll be released in 2026, is that it was so dark, I could not imagine becoming enemies with the father of my children. And that's all that was on offer.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
We all think if we're going through a divorce, it's going to be a dumpster fire, and it's going to be just, it's going to take forever. It's going to be a battle, and prepare to go into debt. I thought
debt and despair, I think. Yes. The combo package.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. Now, fortunately, Michael and I found our way. And I'm really proud. It's been 15 years since we lived in one home, and our kids have gone from kindergarten to college through life in two homes. We'll be graduating our son later this month.
Same.
And I think when it became clear, and actually it was our fourth and final couples therapist who one day just said, I think you're poorly matched. Okay, there's the declaration of the century. And then there was another day when she simply said, I think my work here is done. And it wasn't a battle of let's go lawyer up and divide and conquer. We were very sensible. We knew that we would raise our children 50-50 across two homes, that we would pay for everything 50-50. We were not going to enter into a conversation around alimony, maintenance, spousal support, that sort of thing, or even child support, which you do have to calculate by law. But we were both professionals supporting our own home, and that's what we wanted to do, is to support ourselves individually and then support our children. So the really long story is I got myself a divorce. I carried on in my life as usual, Michael and I finding all the different ways that we could do it better and different, which I'm happy to dive into. It was not until the pandemic. Do y'all remember that little twist?
Oh, man, do we? I got divorced during it.
Right on cue.
Yeah.
Not alone.
Yeah.
Right? And I decided to start working with divorced people during the pandemic. And I didn't know divorce coaching existed, or consulting, or this, you know, more heavily mediated approach to divorce, alternative dispute resolution, all of those options. In essence, it's what Michael and I were looking for. We're like, we just need someone to guide us. We don't know how to do this. And what's the answer everyone says? Call a lawyer.
Right. Exactly. Do you have to attorney up at that point where you've done the counseling route and then the paperwork seems very cold? And yeah, so there was a void.
Absolutely.
There is absolutely a void there. And lawyers, God love you. We need you sometimes in very specific situations. But honestly, I believe the role of family law attorneys right now in the journey of divorce for family is just supersized. Like, it's just gotten so big that it eclipses everything else that a family needs. And we need to right size it, because the lawyers are going to help you get divorced. They are not going to help you know how to be divorced.
Beautifully put. Exactly.
And if there are children between you, your marriage, it might be ending, not your relationship.
Mm-hmm.
That relationship
exactly
is forever.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think as a culture, as a society, not only do we under-support, I would even say we're neglectful of families going through divorce. We don't know how to show up for them and to educate them of how to keep track of all the hockey gear and the ski gear between two homes, right?
Yep. Exactly. The transition, the two roof transition.
How to talk to the kids those early months, so the long and the short of it is I was going on about my merry little business, and during one of my corporate events, and as you know, I've spent 25 years now as a business consultant, and my area of expertise is human behavior and relationships. It don't matter where you're sitting, people is people is people.
Mm-hmm.
And I've set out to help work not suck. In short, like,
yes,
how to develop leaders and employee culture and make sure that we've got engagement and that we're breathing life into our employees, not sucking the life out of, because, well, honestly, what happens at the desk goes home to the dining room table and vice versa.
Absolutely.
And I was presenting at a large leadership conference, and for the first time in 2019, I told a story about my divorce journey and leading change. We were talking about how leaders need to be more thoughtful and really guiding their employees when there's big change initiatives. And I'm sitting in my hotel room working on the presentation. I'm like, I've never led a giant corporate change of any kind. The only giant change initiative I've ever been a part of, oh yeah, was that massive one called moving from one home to two homes as a family. I spoke about it. One of those young men in the audience, his marriage was really tender at the time, and he approached me at the break and he said, "Gosh, Karen, do you think you could help? My wife and I were struggling, and we have a rental that we've owned that's opening up, and we kind of think we should move into two homes for a period of time, not even to get divorced, but to separate." And I walked that couple through the steps of separating the spatulas in the kitchen. Where are we going to tell the kids this message, and what are we going to say? What's the move-in
Wow.
day when we start transitioning? How are we going to build out that schedule? Ooh, and now in a couple of months, we've got Halloween, Thanksgiving, and Christmas. How are we going to navigate that? So I guided this family through that journey. And then a year later, they came back and said, "Okay, we've done a year in two homes. Thank you. We didn't blow ourselves apart. And now we know we're ready for a good divorce." And after working with them, I got on the Googler one night in those dark days of the pandemic because I was not speaking at conferences. I was not leading leadership retreats. I was not doing training in-house. Everything went quiet. And
Yes.
often in that quiet is where we find answers. And then I began to see in 2020 that for about 10 years, there was a movement around divorce coaching and consulting, around alternative dispute resolution, really getting co-parent specialists and training in the hands of families. So I jumped on board, have never turned back. I still work in the corporate business sector 50% of my time and 50% sitting with families side by side, guiding them through their journey like a concierge to a wonderful resort. But not like that at all.
So, Karen, I gotta ask, most of my experience with divorce, it's not usually mutual. And I feel like there's one party that maybe isn't on board with it. Do you work with both sides? Do you work, how does that work when you're helping a couple? Do you only work with one side of the divorce, or is it both people involved?
Great question. And let me take this in two parts. The first of which is someone is the leaver and someone is being left. Those are two different experiences emotionally.
Absolutely.
And it's not uncommon that one spouse, like they got on the train, they left the station, they are down the track. And that other spouse shows up and, like, I didn't even know I had a train ticket and I don't want to get on this train.
Yes. Yeah, we got one of those live right here.
I could have really used your help back in 2020.
Yeah, and that was your journey, wasn't it? That
Yeah.
you were the one being left and didn't even know that the train had left the station.
Right. And grateful now, however, with someone with your expertise, just in relationships, but working with people, it would have been so much easier to navigate because there's so much grief and loss that you feel that is just, like even without kids, there was, I was the godfather to a lot of the kids and I had these connections. And so they were hard to manage and I could have really used guidance. And so I'm just curious how that dynamic works when there's a leaver involved and someone who would
Can you
prefer to
catch the one
stay.
on the train? Can you catch them and bring them to the table?
Well, the first thing I'll say is not every family are right for the good divorce experience, right? Not everybody is my client. My ideal clients are mom and dad on a Sunday afternoon, finally throw in the towel, have a good cry together, and like, I guess tomorrow we're gonna take a step forward. And then they call me. Before
Nice.
they've called a lawyer, before they've told their kids or the grandparents or the next door neighbors, that's the ideal time. Early intervention and prevention. And when we can catch couples right at that moment, right? As soon as they get, and even in that situation, it's not uncommon where they're in different places. So I often will hear from, on my website, people will say, chat with Karen. The first hour is always free with me, the good divorce coach. That's where you find me. You hit a
Love that.
button, you get an hour with me. And it's possible that person hasn't even mentioned the D word to their spouse. It's a
Right.
safe place to explore. And maybe they're talking about it and they're not quite sure what to do. And I might say, JT, why don't you just approach Jordan? Not that the two of you are getting divorced. That's not the
Yeah.
same. This is a hypothetical.
We can
Say,
play along.
point Jordan towards the podcast, towards my website, do a little research, and then just say, hey, I had a free hour with Coach Karen. Why don't you take a free hour and just hear more about what she does and why she does it and how she does it? I don't want you to go sell my services. I don't want you to tell them anything about it because I want to be a neutral to both of you. And as soon as one of you shows up and is like, hey, I've got the answer, and it's just the thing, and she like, well, she's already going to be on your side. I'm not going to talk to that person, right? There can be that resistance.
Right.
And I'll never forget, husband 1262-A got on the phone with him for his intake, and he was a gruff, grumpy. I could just tell he was rolling his eyes from the moment we got on the phone. And I had already had intake with mom, and I said, just have him talk to me. And at the end of our call, he said, well, I got to tell you the truth, Karen. When I got on this phone call, I was pretty sure you were full of shit and I had already made my decision. But within 1 hour and 12 minutes, you've completely changed my mind. I know why you do this work. I know the journey and the path of fire you walked through. I know that this is the right way for our family and that it will protect our kids. Sign me up.
Wow.
I love that.
Then I work with both. So it's not going to be the right fit for everyone. And
Sure.
I will support just one person in the process and help them through their grief, answering some of those important questions, getting them organized when they work with their attorney. But, this experience, and there's a number of us around the country that are pioneering where we bring both together. And it's always been my belief that's when you get best results. And you might be in different places and you might still not be talking day to day, and there might be huge betrayals and trust issues. All the more reason for me to hold both of you as a neutral so that you don't do more harm.
Exactly. Being in the same room and being seen, heard, whether it leads to anything, and feeling, yeah, vouched for, someone in your corner. That's the Swiss baby. She's Switzerland. I love
I'm a
that.
Switzerland.
Yeah.
And even, I'm here in Western Montana and I work with clients across the country because we can. But even my local clients, initially I used to meet with them in person and I've just stopped that altogether. Everything is Zoom. It's when you're in the rupture of coming apart, it is really hard to like arrive in the parking lot together and sit in the waiting room together and then sit side by side in that energy and then have to walk out together. And so I just protect everyone. We do everything in the Zoom room. And I
Beautiful.
meet with the couple together. And then I also meet with them individually. And we kind of alternate within that space.
Wow. So my mind is just turning because this is so interesting to me. My next question is, can you let go when there's still love? How do you know when it's the right time for divorce?
Going for it. I know that 7 year itch if it doesn't hit at the right time. Interesting.
Well, I'm the last person who would tell anyone when you hit these three metrics, that means out the door, because every relationship is so unique. And certainly for children, if there are children involved, if you begin to see that the conflict of the marriage is so present and constant, that it's impacting the kids negatively. What we know through research is that living and growing up in a high conflict environment is more damaging than living across two homes with happy parents.
Oh, yeah.
So not exposing kids. And for me, I had one of those breaking moments. to your question specifically, because the mantra in my head was stay for the kids, stay for the kids, stay for the kids. I can just stay for the kids. And they were young and they're 5 and 7. And I'm like, wow, I got like a good 10, 15 years in this marriage that is eroding. And then there was a moment, my kids were splashing around in the bathtub, being really crazy and splashing and all. And I was just on the brink of my stress, my irritation, my fears, and I was lashing out on my kids. They were getting the worst of me. And I suddenly saw their big eyes and their faces, and they were scared. And then when they were scared of their mama and my reaction, I thought, that this isn't who I want to be. This is not the mother that they deserve. I need to leave for my children, not stay for them, but actually leave for them. And that is a paradigm shift. And I also realized early on, and I would say we should leave while there's still love. I'm going to soften that. We should leave before the destruction starts. We should leave while I still have respect and
Because there
compassion.
was love. At one point, there was love in this. If we could just take a drop of that to be civil, there is, that's always heartbreaking when it's like instant to dust. That is, yeah, hard to conceptualize.
Doesn't make any sense. And maybe more specifically, this question of when do you know? I think we generally stay too long. I think there is just a long habit, and I see it in my corporate work. We hold on to employees
Because we
that
don't like change.
we
None
don't
of us.
like, and we don't like breakups. We're terrible at breaking up. Again, the narrative around divorce and marriage is that unless that house is on fire, you better not run out of it, young lady.
You took a
So that
vow.
good enough world, like, no, he's not beating me. No, we're not having serial philandering behavior. Nobody's being in, financially in ruining the family. Nobody's like, we're two really great humans who are poorly married, that match. And maybe we married young and we were a good match and we've evolved and changed and now we're not. Maybe we got married too quickly. But again, we know that truth before we speak it, but then we stay. And that's when addictions do start to show up. That's when adultery starts to happen. That's when I'm going to just start hanging out at every function at school because I don't want to be.
Sabotage.
We begin exactly the internal sabotage. And it's like a kamikaze pilot going in and like, I don't know how to get out. So we're going to blow it up consciously or unconsciously. And I was that kamikaze in our marriage. And we're waving the flags, and it's the concern, and we're trying to fix until suddenly, oh, now we have a bad enough reason to leave. But in the meantime, we've done a whole bunch more damage to the marriage. I had a couple about 6 months ago call me. And they were ready to go. Wife wanted to go back to counseling. Dad's like, I'm re it's really clear. I'm done. Actually, they didn't have children. So husband was like, I'm done. It's just clear. 6 weeks later, I hear from them. Never mind. We've decided to go back into therapy and we're going to give it another try, which I'm like, great. Good for you. 4 months later, husband's having an affair. This is definitely over. Now we have to get divorced. Now, 6 months earlier, there was no affair. And he's the one who said, I'm done. It's so clear to me. But he went back, right? So there's something to be said about how can you give yourself permission to know your truth and to speak it from a place of compassion and actually take a graceful exit, a dignified exit, rather than the dumpster fire, kamikaze, nuclear button tent.
Exactly. And you hit the word that I wanted to say so badly, that you offer this gorgeous permission, that this gentleman that approached you at your speaking event after that engagement, that he was like, it's either a yes or a no. We're in or we're out, black and white. And you're like, or there's a chance we could still salvage our individual lives and offer this good path through.
Are you thinking about getting divorced?
Before you call a lawyer, call The Good Divorce Coach, Karen McNinney, a certified divorce counselor, co-parenting specialist, and mediator. Karen's signature Good Divorce experience will guide you through your divorce journey from the day you make that difficult decision to the day the decree is signed, all for a predictable fee. The Good Divorce Coach will teach you and your partner how to get divorced and be divorced with less conflict and less debt. Visit thegooddivorcecoach.com to get in touch with Karen. I also want to know, like, what kind of work do you do with permission to just, I think JT wouldn't allow himself to find joy ever again had I not bombarded his life with fun. And so with your clients that have gone through the steps, they have successfully good divorce action with you, and they're in the how to be divorced. When do you give that permission to, yeah, get out there and live again?
Right. And I actually refer to this stage as the divorgasmic time.
Yes. Yes.
Love it.
That makes sense.
Yes.
And sometimes it is a little wink, wink, nudge, 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 because like, oh my gosh, I didn't think I would ever have another lover, that I would ever date again. And there are some of us who revert to our 20 something late teen behaviors and go hog wild, right?
Yep. Present.
Present.
Yes. Yep. Karen, I told you, freedom slut. I named the phase. I don't even.
There
I mean,
you
come
go.
On, child.
And of course, if you have children and you're in your divorgasmic era, those kids don't need to be any part of that. And they don't need to meet any of those people unless it shifts into something very meaningful. And you have, my recommendation is a minimum of 6 months under your belt from exclusivity, not first date, not first time we swiped right. But once you become exclusive and you're in, then if you get a 6 month tail to that, then chances are it's a longer relationship, because we have all these love drugs, right?
Yes.
The other thing you're talking about in terms of permission is I know I had a lot of divorce guilt. My kids are down the road at their dad's house. I'm here alone eating nachos again, standing at the kitchen counter with nothing but a lamp on in my sweatpants and no bra for the fifth day in a row.
It's healing.
Right. And finally finding the opportunities of, I can go have fun. I actually should go have fun. And it took longer than it probably should have. I mean, it was years before I even started to travel, like to leave town, because what if they need me? What if I have their favorite shoes in my house? What, I can't, I'm still on duty. So we try to talk about the residential parent and the support parent, because you're never really off duty as a parent mentally.
Right.
For like forever until you die. There, you put some DNA together. You're there. But eventually I had friends who really helped me to see a path towards joy beyond divorce and fulfillment. And then where I could date more meaningful long-term relationships, where I could travel and go on vacation without my kids. And they know that that became a very active habit of mine. They get great trips with me, but I give myself permission to take trips without them. And you mentioned, JT, this, you know, experience of the grief.
Yeah.
And part of it is it's kind of hard to go out and have a great time when you're grieving. So giving yourself permission also for the grief. And I've said, you know, if my husband had actually died, my community around me would have showed up really differently. I mean, can you imagine? I don't know if either of you have had a loss in your family, and there's the meal train,
the casserole
is there, and people are checking in. But my husband didn't die. My marriage died. My family and the future fantasy I had for my family died. My identity as a wife and a partner died. My identity as a full-time parent died. And as you were saying, also, I might have lost some friends, some relatives, those godchildren, those nieces and nephews, those shared friends we always traveled with, that now it's not going to be the four of us. It's going to be three or none. Or so there is death and grief around every corner of the divorce experience, and we wildly understate that impact on the individual. I don't know if the two of you had your grief journey. Even when it was like, okay, we're going to get divorced, hooray, congratulations, there's still a closure of one thing.
Of course, and they sneak up on you as grief is known to do, where there are the surprise, like, oh, this little birthday of this nugget that I loved so dearly. And now is it in, all those new boundaries that you can cross there.
Absolutely. And I experienced that in a unique way where I was the first of my friend group. No one had been through a divorce. All of my friends and my parents were still together. It was like a new concept in my life. And I remember being irritated and put off by people who would maybe ask the wrong questions or try to offer sympathy when
No pity. I would
pity.
argue that I struggled with the pity component. So culturally, I think that's where I'm going to go with my blame game, is we have our culture of it's uncomfortable. You don't know if they're the lever or the left, and let's not talk about it. And so a way to figure out, that's why we have this podcast, is to encourage others to go, we need to dig into that. We need to support our people in a way they want to be supported at that time. And so I thought congratulations was the move because the pity can be very challenging. But what do you think? I mean, I think culturally too, with giving yourself that permission to have a little fun, be that mom you want your kids to see, valuing that travel and whatnot.
Right. And I was curious what your thoughts would be on advice for friends. Like if you have someone going through this,
What do
like
you say?
what kind of things can you offer? What's the best way to support someone in this situation?
I like to start with the don'ts before we do the do's. Don't ask why.
But I wanna.
Why did you get divorced? Why are you getting divorced? Most of us going through the divorce, that's already an impossible question for us.
Yeah, the sex was too good, usually the answer. Yep.
Okay.
Don't ask why.
Don't ask why. I like that.
Marriage is like a sweater that gets knitted together. And when you pull on one little piece of yarn, it's going to tug everything else. And then you pull over on the financial one, and that tugs the sexual one, then that tugs the religious one, spiritual one. It's all connected. And none of us, I think it would be fair to point to this event on this day is why we're getting divorced. It is often an erosion. There might have been like maybe a little tectonic shift, right? That, oh, big things changed. Oh, but we're still stable. But then over time, and then all of a sudden, one day the house has fallen off the side of the cliff because that slow erosion has happened. So don't ask why. Ask, what do you need? Ask, how are you doing today? You can ask, what's one bright thing that's showing up for you in the darkness of your divorce? And I would even go as far as to say that there is opportunity to train, other than digging in right here with the two of you, but to train our community. So let me give you an example. When I'm working with the couple who have children, we start like, that Monday morning, they call and say, Karen, what's next? We do two things simultaneously. We put together a communications strategy. And this is when I put my business consultant on, like, I'm your project manager, I'm your risk manager, I'm your communications director. We have a project to do right now, and it's the project of getting divorced and then getting functional in two homes, or functional independently if you're walking away without children. So in that communication strategy, yeah, we're talking about what we're going to say to the kids, what day of the week, what time of the day, what location, what month, what, like, very, very thoughtful. We're not going to blurt it out over breakfast. But we also have multi levels of circle of support. So if you think of the galaxy, you and the kids are kind of that center point of the solar system. And then that next ring is probably the grandparents, the aunts and uncles, and our relatives. And then the next concentric circle is, oh, coaches and teachers and preschool, and right, the people the kids see. And then we have our circle of friends, our shared friends, our individual friends, and then maybe even the friends, the kids' friends. So Jack and Jill are best buddies. Jack just found out over the weekend his parents are getting divorced. First thing he's going to do Monday morning is say, "Jill, you'll never believe what happened." Jill's going to go home, and during her evening, "Mom, Dad, Jack's parents are getting divorced. Are you getting divorced?" Because it can feel contagious. So we're also going to let Jill's parents know, "Hey, so I help them write basically a public service announcement, and we do it in
Yeah.
different ways. And there might be one to family, and there might be one with circle of support, teachers,
I love it.
coaches, mentors. There might be one to extended friends. And it usually says things like, 'We are writing to you today with sad news and news that we wish we didn't have to report, but we have chosen to dissolve our marriage. We have chosen to dissolve our marriage, not blow our family up, and not he's doing this or she's doing that. We're unified because that's one of the reasons people ignore us. They don't know, are we supposed to take sides? Whose fault is it?'
Landmines, yes.
Yeah, take sides is a big thing for
Taking
sure.
side, yeah.
We tell them in that short little message, and we say to them, we are heartbroken. We haven't told our children yet. We'll be telling them in 3 days. So please keep this. We kind of preemptively let them know anything strategic that way around timing. And then we say things like, we hope that when you see us in the grocery store, you don't dodge down the next aisle. You can actually come over and say hi. We'd like you to. You don't need to ask us why. We tell them that in the letter. Don't ask why, ask how we're doing. You don't need to be a therapist to our kids or to us, and you certainly don't need to choose sides. Well, we've decided to be on a side together, and it's the side of our children. So you can be on their side, and we'll name the kids in that. And then
Powerful.
everybody gets the same information at the same time, and they know where we stand, and we've told them how to respond to us. We might even put in there if it's the friends family, like, and if you want to have a play date with Jack, you don't have to guess where he's at. Just send a text to both of us and we'll take care of it.
I
Because
love it.
that's another thing. Like, I don't know what home Jack is in. I don't know if he's mom or dad. That's weird. We just won't play with Jack anymore. So we train them. And the families who have done this approach with me, they immediately after they send out that email, they get so much love from their community.
Yes. Oh my goodness. If I got that email, I would say we don't even communicate this well. We're happily married right now. Like, huh, look at what they've done here. The evolutionary power of just saying we're taking ownership of this, be there for those kids.
Well,
I love it.
and they're asking for what they want from their support network. I think
Yes.
that's absolutely brilliant, truly.
And the journalism part of that is write your own headlines and stay ahead of the press. You control the story before anyone else is going to pick it up as gossip. And then they see you like, "Well, I heard about it from someone else. I don't know if I'm supposed to know or not to know." Like, everyone just gets so weird
It gets
around
so weird.
divorced folks. So, hear, hear, do better. Do
Yes.
better.
We love that. So would you, somebody right now getting married? I know this is a little curveball, but what advice would you give someone getting married today?
Oh gosh. I would sit down not only with whomever is going to marry you, as we do. I mean, think about all the things. We've got our wedding planner and our pastor and the flower person and the food person, and we're planning this wedding. I would also sit down with a divorce lawyer. I would go on to my podcast, The Good Divorce Show, and listen to episodes of family. I always think you should write your parenting plan, should you ever get divorced, within the first year of your child being born. Because that's when you're in the deepest amount of love with each other and the child. Not because we want it to happen. That's what insurance is for, right? I'm going to pay for insurance and hope I never need it. But I think we are undereducated about what we're agreeing to. It's so darn easy to get married. You can do it in a
Yes, it
day.
is. Oh,
Go to
yes.
the courthouse, pay your $25 fee. You don't have to do a blood test anymore in most places.
Nope.
Walk away married. It is very complicated, as you both know, to get divorced. So again, just because we talk about divorce doesn't mean it's going to happen. And I liken this. I'm integrating this into a TED talk I'm working on right now about when we sit down on a plane and it's getting ready for takeoff. What do they do every time without fail?
Oxygen mask.
They tell us what to do if the plane crashes. Every time. Here's this, here's that, there's your exits, here's the thing. Does that mean anybody expects that plane to crash? No. Do we want
the point?
No, but we're going to tell you what to expect and how to protect yourself if we run into turbulence. That's what I would like for people getting married. Is the airline just in case so that you know the risk that you're taking. And again, to me, that isn't discounting the love and the excitement of marriage and weddings, but we're so in denial. The fairy tale has eclipsed the reality of what you're signing up for in marriage and what it might take if you run into turbulence.
Exactly, because I think their COVID might have reset it a little bit, but there is the planning of a wedding, of a party, not at all in consideration of the marriage. The awkward Wednesday 12 years from now when you're staring at each other on the couch, not at all chatting about that with the wedding planner. I think that's really beautiful advice.
Absolutely. In my prep for this, we listened to your podcast.
We love it.
We checked out so much of what you have on your website, and I ran into a term that I wasn't all that familiar with, and it was relationship literacy.
Oh, the and, dyslexic. Bless you.
Exactly. The dyslexic. And I was just like, and maybe you've already touched on some of this stuff, but I was just, what does that exactly mean?
Yeah, this is really my bigger movement, and thank you for calling it out. It's a term that I coined to think about, and really it comes from the work I've been doing over 20 years in the workplace. Again, my children who are now graduating with high school degrees have had a lot of time learning how to do long division and write in cursive. They had very little time on how to have a difficult conversation with another human.
Yes.
Now, as a human behavior relationship expert being hired by companies across the country, no one has ever called me in to help them with handwriting or division.
Yep.
It is only, my AI does that, only to help them with difficult conversations, which again, we're terrible at. So this gets back to this idea of relationship literacy. And even before we get married, if I could wave a magic wand over our education system, and I'm not talking about the morals and values that we learn in our own home, but again, how do we know ourselves better so that when we pick a partner, we know what we're looking for? How do we know how to discern and dive into that information? So we're not just saying yes to a fairy tale and yes to a beautiful wedding dress and a day with our family. And I've heard these different, you know, when it comes to compatibility scoring, it's, would you be good roommates? Because that you're going to do forever. And I know so many couples that are, myself included, just terrible roommates. That's going to wear on you. Fiscal partners, do you have the same kind of values around spending, saving, what you would invest in? Another one is our spiritual religious life, is that compatible? Because that's really important. Family, do you want kids? Do you not want kids? Also our grandparents, I want every holiday with extended family. They don't like family at all. Like, again, are we on the same page when it comes to family? And then free time is kind of that fifth one. Like, how do you like to spend your free time? And you might be the person who's like, I want to go to the giant wild festival where there's lots of people and music and all. And your partner is, I will be in the basement with my book. Now, you might be fine with that, but you know, and I'm sure there's many, many more categories. But again, do we stop and really think about it? And that relationship literacy, I always think we're teaching reading, writing, and arithmetic. Why are we not teaching more about relationship?
Relationship with self, retirement planning, social development, like it is horrifying. We're going to only be able to talk in emojis eventually if we keep this up.
Right. And I am not dissing on our education, our educators, I will say. I come from a family of educators. I'm an educator. But again, like lawyers, these people are doing precisely what they're trained to do in an archaic system. Lawyers are trained to fight for their singular client in a system that is designed for an adversarial standoff. That's what you get. And in education, our education system is primarily based on what was built during the Industrial Revolution. We've got a bunch of factories. We need to get a bunch of workers who need to read and write and do arithmetic. And if they make it to, we'll call it eighth grade, that's good. We can put them in the factory and we're going to put them all in lines and rows, just like a factory, and teach them the same thing at the same time at the same age. We know this doesn't work. Oh, and let's do it really early in the morning for those teenagers when we know their brain is not even ready to absorb anything. Now we're digging into education, but it's related. I think if we were, I mean, I want better divorces, but what I really want are fewer divorces. And in order to get fewer divorces, we need to help people make better choices in their relationship decision making.
I love that. Leads right into my next question. Any advice for people like us who are on their second time around? When you're venturing into getting married for a second time, is there anything that you think people really need to focus on?
I know it makes me want to flip the question on the two of you.
He's terrified. I rocked at divorce. He's like, it wasn't that easy. No, I'm teasing.
And I, although I have had some really lovely, important relationships in my life in the 15 years, I am single right now. I have not repartnered. And of all the many people I've dated in 15 years, only two of them have been introduced to my children as a significant partner in that period of time. And you aren't in the journey with the kids, but you are in the journey of, I don't want to rinse and repeat what I did the first time. So a couple of guidelines. I think one, and again, if you're listening or you're sitting in front of me, Jordan and JT, and you didn't do one of these things, that's fine, right? I think there's great value in making sure one thing is really ended before the next thing begins. And even beyond that, and that's that gray period of like, well, we're still divorcing. Well, the lawyers have, well, we're not quite buttoned up yet. Like there just is a gift in clarity in that boundary because it triggers a different set of realistic emotions. When you're going through divorce, it is different than I'm now in divorce recovery. And that happens, in my opinion, the day the paperwork is signed, sealed, and delivered from the judge. So letting one thing in before the next begins. The other is then giving yourself some runway just to be single, to date yourself, to fall in love with yourself. I think a lot of times we move into relationships to fill, to I'm not complete on my own. I need my other half. I'm not fully content. Who will take care? There is something when you live in your single self and you love yourself and you are content in the life that you've built and you're financially secure, then that means that next partner, I don't require anything from you. I'm not in need because as soon as I'm requiring and I have need and expectation, there will be disappointment. But when I know I'm responsible to myself, my emotions, and if I do need something, I'm not going to come at it with some passive aggressive, or you better read my mind. I'm going to make a request or the complaints, right? I'm just going to complain about the thing, but stop the complaining about the socks on the floor and you never load the dishwasher right. And how come you always got to go? And instead, I can just say, I just do better when the laundry is in the baskets. I just think my mental health is better. So, would you mind, to the best of your ability, just getting the laundry in the basket? And I find I'm pretty anal about that dishwasher because I don't want 27 things left in the sink because you loaded it like Picasso instead of an engineer. So, either, right? These little teeny things. So we learn about ourself in our singlehood before we recouple.
Beautifully said. We are pushing that deadline. We're running out of time. We love to end our interviews with a very special question that goes hopefully a little bit beyond your work and gets a little bit insight into you. And so if you're game, Jordan's got one final question for you.
I am just loving Karen's life so much. Thank you for this time today. But I'm dying to know, for someone committed to serving clients during this, as we've coined, difficult time, challenging, how do you take care of you? Can you share kind of how and when you get that time to love on yourself?
Oh, thank you for asking and for caring about me in that way. And nobody's ever asked this question. So digging into that. I actually have just in the last year, because I've been doing this work for only 3 years. I've been marinating in it, researching, living it, developing, writing about it for over 15. But coming into the client work, when I'm sitting side by side with clients, it is so hard in ways that I didn't anticipate, that has not been in other parts of my life, when you're sitting in the conflict with other people. And I'm gonna clarify the long answer to this short question, which is I have two buckets of clients that I work with in the divorce side of things. Those that are Monday morning, we've made the decision, now what? That's like building a new house. We're going to have a blueprint. We're going to make sure your foundation is solid. We're going to put the windows and the doors where you want and walls where they need to be. And the electrical is never going to shock you. Go forth and have a great life. The other clients that come to me are co-parent counseling. These are folks who went through a dumpster fire divorce 1, 2, 3 years ago, 5 years ago. Mm. Parents maybe like haven't talked to each other in a year, literally other than text. You can drop the stuff at my door. The kids will meet you in the playground. I will do the carpool. They come to me to try to repair and improve their relationship and move forward. That is renovating the old house that was on a crappy foundation. The electrical shocks you all the time, but you don't know when. And the basement's flooded.
Yep.
It's terrible. And I've actually made a decision in my caseload to not have those families on my caseload anymore. It actually was starting to take a real hard mental toll. And I was moving towards, in the same way of making sure I had, like if you work as a therapist, you usually have supervision. You have someone that you're talking to keep things clean and keep you supported. So on a practical level, that's one way how I've put boundaries around my work. The other part is I have started to say Friday at 5, and you guys are the end of my Friday, no matter what, I will stop working. I have to fully unplug all of Friday night, all of Saturday. I'll come back and do Sunday email and check in. My clients have access to me 7 days a week, 24/7. I am not 911. I'm not going to drop everything. But if there's a fire starting to brew with a couple, I want to get it out before it engulfs anything. So, and sometimes someone just needs to write an email that's, and then I'm like, please send that to me. Do not send it to your spouse.
Yes. The venting email vessel.
I will take it. And people are like, I don't know why it feels so good, Karen. It just gets it off my chest. And I know someone watched it. So the other thing that I do that I've been devoted to for a long time is I'm not waiting for my sabbatical to live like a retired person. Or vice versa. I believe in early sabbaticals. So I will, and because I'm self-employed and I have been for 18 years, part of that is I don't want to subscribe to 2 weeks of vacation a year and work 40 to 60 hours a week.
Preach.
I went to graduate school in London, England, and I think living in Europe just expanded my brain to better understand how the rest of the world does this.
Like, you're closed for the month of August. Who sanctioned this? It's amazing.
Amazing. Love it.
And you get 2 weeks here and a month there and another there. So I actually try to take about 6 weeks off a year. And that tends to be every other month. I unplug. And I don't always get to unplug fully because of my divorcing clients. I try to get them in a place, but sometimes I'm checking in, but I might go and work remote somewhere. And I have a lot of happy distraction in my life with friends, with family. And I live in a beautiful, beautiful place here in Western Montana and in my community of Missoula. And I have a golden retriever. So, really, what
Yes.
do you need for self-care?
Yes. I
Well,
know when Karen approached, we're connected, and it said that the good divorce coach, I was like, that's not a thing. And then it says she loves with this dog running with scissors through the Rocky Mountain West. And I was like, oh, she's my people. Yeah, I believe everything now. What a
6 weeks.
6 weeks is,
Amazing.
yep,
Good for
life
you. And
goals.
that unplug and that recharge is so important. And so thank you for sharing that with
Thank you
us.
for indulging us. Yes.
And thank you for doing this. I think that our listeners are going to have so many amazing takeaways. This has been truly special. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your hard work, Miss Karen. You're one of a kind. Amazing.
I appreciate it. Love digging in with you too. Keep it going.
Absolutely. Need to check out her podcast. And you sort of dropped, you've got a book coming out next year, sounds like.
May of 2026, there will be a memoir title to be determined, but we'll be shouting loud and clear. And it's the journey of how Michael and I found our way towards a good enough divorce because we've been in the classroom every year. But, our kids, they're not in jail yet. They're,
Nailed it. Nailed it. Well, we cannot wait to have you back
Yes.
to promote your exciting book coming out.
Karen, you're amazing. Thank you so much.
All our best to you.
If you enjoyed this conversation, it would mean the world to us if you had a second to share this episode or your favorite episode. If you haven't already, please subscribe or follow on the homepage at letsdigintothat.com or wherever you find your podcast. Thank you, Love Ninjas.
The impact of your support is greater than you could ever imagine. Thank you, thank you, thank you.